Okay, thank you. When Simone asked me a few days ago that I should give a nearly introductory talk for this workshop, I wasn't sure what I should talk about. I thought I should maybe discuss something about the experiments on quantum spin liquids, but in some ways an excellent introduction was already given yesterday by Leon Balanz. His talk, as you saw, had a lot of gourmet delights, and I'm sure people enjoyed that. Compared to that, today's talk is going to be some bread and cheese sandwich, unfortunately. This maybe partly reflects the fact that the real world is not as exotic. But maybe, I mean, more than that, I mean, it sort of shows that my own understanding of this subject is much more mundane than Leon's. I mean, that's probably the main reason here. Okay, so this outline would be, Simone asked me, when I suggested I'll talk about experimental candidates, he said I need to also introduce what a quantum spin liquid is. And that was already, Leon gave an excellent and compact introduction to this very complex subject. I'll give a slightly more pedestrian one. What is a quantum spin liquid? And then focus really on various experimental candidates that have been proposed, present really some data, why they were considered as quantum spin liquids, are there alternative explanations for their observed behavior? And really, I'd like to focus on this issue over here, and maybe somebody else can chime in. I'm sure people know more than I do on this. What would be really a convincing evidence for a quantum spin liquid? This is really a challenge for experiments and numerical studies. Okay, so what is a quantum spin liquid? So as I said, I'm going to take a very pedestrian, simple-minded point of view over here. So first of all, if we think about a liquid in some sense is a very unusual state of matter because as we know in a typical phase diagram, a liquid state exists only between the triple point and the critical point, and in some sense is really not a distinct state than the gas. But really, in many ways, the gas is the simplest state that one can think of, where atoms are far apart, and usually solid is the more natural condensed ground state of most systems. And so the liquid state really exists in this small region. It is strongly condensed, yet fluid phase, and indeed, we know that for life, this phase is indeed very important. A quantum liquid, clearly, typically the dynamics of collective dynamics of molecules in a liquid is overdamped, and whereas what we would like to see in a quantum liquid is essentially coherent quantum dynamics. And that essentially means that one has to be at low temperatures. This is really a question mark for the experts over here. I mean, it would be nice if quantum spin liquid also meant some macroscopic quantum phenomena. The only quantum liquid as far as the translational motion of atoms is concerned is helium, and indeed it remains a liquid down to zero temperature, we all know that, and in fact is a superfluid, and people have observed Josephson effect, for example, in helium. And so that is really a macroscopic quantum phenomena. It's not clear to me that quantum spin liquids will necessarily show some interesting macroscopic quantum phenomena. Okay, so now if we consider an assembly of interacting quantum spins, which are, let's say, nearly decoupled or very weakly coupled to the rest of the environment, then one would say that a nearly ideal paramagnet is like a gas, because each spin basically is independent and rarely interacts with other spins. A fully ordered state, like a ferromagnet or an antiferromagnet, is like a solid. And in between, one can have a spin liquid, which will have well-developed, substantial, short-range order, but not be frozen in a particular state. So states like a ferromagnet, antiferromagnet, helical or spiral states, and also spin glass, these are all really frozen states. When one does not have that, yet has strong short-range order, so the neighbors are well correlated, yet there is fluidity to the spin state, that would be basically called a spin liquid. And then a quantum spin liquid, of course, must exist down to low temperatures, possibly T equal to zero, so that it continues to show coherent quantum dynamics. Okay, and I think Leon brought up this, this is an excellent review, and many of the things I'm going to discuss over here overlap with what is in this review by Leon in Nature this year, just a few months ago. Okay, so in this review, he also talks about spin ice, which is really an excellent example of a classical spin liquid, where really the short range order is fully developed. The neighboring spins are completely constrained by ice-like rules. However, they remain fluid, basically, and can change from one of these states to another. And basically, in this case, the theory and experimental signatures are really on very firm footing. Okay, but we are going to focus here on quantum spin liquids. So I'm again following my pedestrian viewpoint over here. I'm going to exclude 90% of the systems that have been called quantum spin liquids by experimentalists. And so I'm just going to do this little by little over here. So exclusion from what we are going to consider quantum spin liquids here. So first of all, a pair of antiferromagnetically coupled spins form fully entangled rotationally invariant singlet states. This is well known. And basically, if once they form singlet states, they can decouple from the rest. And it can happen to a larger cluster of an even number of spins as well. Okay. So let us exclude from our consideration for today systems that by material geometry decouple into finite systems, basically, or so they're sort of, their ground states are adiabatically related to decoupled spin clusters. And a large number of experimental systems that have been called quantum spin liquids by the experimentalists actually fall in this category. Copper nitrate is an example of alternating Heisenberg chain, basically, where you have two strongly coupled copper atoms, and then they are weakly coupled to the next pair of two, and so on. This is a weak copper CuHPCl, some organic material, basically. This is a system of weakly coupled ladders. Calcium vanadium oxide is a system of weakly coupled plaquette of spins. Strontium copper borate is perhaps the most interesting of these, is a two-dimensional system. I just want to briefly mention that there was a Japanese group that actually found this particular material where the copper atoms have this kind of a crystal geometry. And it has this unusual property that a pair of spins are near each other and strongly coupled and then weakly coupled to other spins. But the weak coupling is actually via this kind of pair of bonds, basically, which is such that if you form a singlet on all these, that system truly decouples from everything else. Okay, these two, the extra bonds do not couple the system at all. So really, the this product of singlet ground states remains an exact ground state for the system. So this system has a lot of interesting behavior, but that's not what we are looking for. And let me also say that in general, even when the system's, the ground state is essentially decoupled, that does not mean that excitations are decoupled. If you promote one of the singlets to a triplet, basically it can become, it is usually dispersive. One could call them triplons, and they're at finite temperature, there will be a dilute gas of them, and their chemical potential is controlled by magnetic fields. Sometimes pressure can act as a quantum temperature, if you like, and one can observe all kinds of interesting phenomena, including Bose-Einstein condensation in these systems. Okay, some more exclusions. I mean, I think Leon put all these in one category, but I'm sort of slightly separating them here. So a valence bond solid would be a system that breaks lattice symmetry. So to begin with, you do not have, by geometry, a system made out of essentially weakly coupled cluster of spins, but essentially something by, to begin with, is like a regular system, like a square lattice or a triangular lattice, but it breaks the lattice symmetry, and thus spins pair up in a specific way. So this is sort of in some ways more analogous to molecular solids, really. So it ends up by spontaneous symmetry breaking as a system of decoupled spin cluster. So in that case, one of course must have a finite temperature phase transition. And actually, following the old work of pyrrels and pyrrels transition and their analogs in the spin system, spin pyrrels transition, exactly solved models such as the Majumdar-Ghosh model and the work of Cross and Fisher and others on the phase transition in these systems, they are very well understood again in quasi one-dimensional systems. But I don't know of any really good example of higher dimensional valence bond solid. There was this recent article in Nature Physics from less than a month ago, valence bond solid state in the pinwheel state in a Kagome system. This is again, basically, if you look at the system over here, it looks completely undistorted, but you can see that they have these highly dispersive triplet modes, okay? That is actually already a hint that the system is strongly distorted, and they argue quite convincingly that the system is well described by these by this dimerized ground state, where these couplings J2 and J4, for example, differ by a factor of 2. If they were roughly equal, then the dispersion would have been extremely weak. Okay, but I'm not sure this counts as a true valence bond solid state, because the distortions are really present up to high temperatures, and there's no evidence for a finite temperature phase transition. Okay, so and I'm also going to exclude, perhaps this is a this is a full 20 years of spin liquid physics in condensed matter, valence bond states that actually mesh with the lattice. So just because lattice symmetry is not broken does not mean that the state is not a valence bond state. And really, these states were first proposed by Affleck, Kennedy, Lieb, and Tesaki. So an example would be if I have a spin 3/2 system on a honeycomb lattice, one can imagine the spin 3/2 basically as a symmetrized version of 3 spin halves, and one of them one can certainly write down Hamiltonians for which the exact ground state would be one where one of these forms a singlet with the neighbor here, another one with the neighbor there, and yet another one with the neighbor there. The system doesn't break any lattice symmetry, but really is a valence bond solid in some guise. And indeed, one can also write, their first model really was a spin 1 chain version of this, and one believes that even the Haldane chains and spin ladders for that matter lie essentially in the same kind of ground state phase, and so in that sense we are sort of going to exclude those systems as well. Okay, so what are we looking for? What are theorists looking for here? So this is I think Leon said it more precisely, basically a landmark paper on quantum spin liquids is this work by Anderson and Fazekas and Anderson on resonating valence bonds. So what one is looking for really is a state where one has many valence bond configurations and one has a resonance between them, something that allows delocalization of fractional spin excitation. So basically this is a caricature gotten from somewhere. So basically, this drawing is supposed to be spins paired up in some way with some other spin, and the ground state is supposed to be some superposition of many of these. But if we think about there is a kind of topological order that arises when the ground state is in such linear superposition of states. That is basically, if one cuts through this, let's say, system over here, one can count how many of these dimers are crossing this line, and basically if we go from one configuration to another, one would find that this line does not change. And hence there is a degeneracy. One can imagine different sectors doesn't change modulo 2. So there is a degeneracy in these systems, and one would expect some kind of ground state degeneracy in the thermodynamic limit. The other, perhaps the most important part, is that this fluidity is allowed to heal. If we cut a bond and make two of the spins free, then those spins can basically separate from each other and behave like free spin-ons. I mean, that is absolutely crucial. And what is shown over here is that if we had a valence bond solid, then if you were to try to separate two spins over here from a pair, then it would create a string of frustrated, if you like, state over here, there will be a string tension associated with this, and essentially these two guys will be confined. So deconfinement of such excitations is really a key hallmark of the kind of quantum spin liquids that one is looking for. So one can write down simple models called quantum dynamo models, where essentially one restricts only to the Hilbert space, let's say, of short range or nearest neighbor valence bond states. That is still an exponentially large Hilbert space, and one can study different models in that space, and indeed people like Mosner and Sodhi, for example, and Miskwich and others have shown that there is a there are cases where the ground state turns out to be a linear superposition of all possible short-range valence bond states. Such states are gap topological spin liquids. Okay, but it is yet to be seen in a Heisenberg-type model with reasonable with reasonable interactions. Very often to get to a model where such a quantum dynamo model is actually a representative of a more realistic model that might be seen in experiments, I haven't seen. Okay, so one can also have gapless algebraic spin liquids, and those are associated with long-range dimers, long-range dimer pairing, and Leon gave an excellent discussion of this Gutzwiller projected Fermi C or BCS states. So I'm basically not going to say much over here. Essentially, whenever one tries to represent a spin one object in terms of spin half objects, in terms of either spinners or in terms of fermions, one always ends up with some gauge degrees of freedom. And so one could say that, in fact, search for quantum spin liquids is also a search for these gauge fields and fluctuating gauge fields. So a direct signature of something like that would certainly be quite convincing. Okay, so where can we find such quantum spin liquids? So one general rule of thumb in condensed matter is that if you want to look at enhanced fluctuation, you should look at low dimensions. And in fact, Phil Anderson has often claimed that this one-dimensional beta ansatz solution was his primary motivation for this RVB discussion, and indeed it satisfies all the criteria that we've been talking about. But we are also going to exclude that case because really 1D is special in too many ways. So first of all, antiferromagnetic long-range order can only be algebraic in one dimension by general theorems, extensions of Merwin-Wagner type theorems. And so in some sense, the one-dimensional beta ansatz solution is as ordered as it can be. And also domain walls are points. This point was made by Leon yesterday. And so indeed, they can act like particles and so on. So we are really going to exclude this also from consideration, really. So in general, we would like low spin. We would like geometric frustration is going to play a role. Almost all the exactly soluble models, they basically start by fine-tuning the system to a point where you have an extensive ground state degeneracy at classical level, and then you couple these in some interesting ways to get to various kinds of quantum spin liquids. So geometric frustration is probably going to play an important role, and the consensus in recent years has been that itinerant systems or something near the Mott limit, which has not just Heisenberg exchange but longer range ring exchanges, may be very important.
Excuse me. By itinerant systems, you don't mean systems where the electrons can actually not conductors, right?
I'm really thinking of systems which are actually insulating but near the Mott limit, right? Okay, so there have been a number of proposed candidates, and actually many more lately. So this is a partial list over here. Helium-3 adsorbed on graphite, cesium copper chloride, a variety of organic molecular crystals, the Kagome materials, Herbert-Smithites, 3D hyper-Kagome system. And I'm going to just present some of the data for some of these systems. One key thing that people look for, experimentalists often look for, is this frustration parameter. That is, how low is the ordering temperature compared to the Curie-Weiss temperature. Okay, so that was called the frustration parameter by Art Ramirez, and typically if that number is bigger than 10, then that tells you that something exotic is going on in the system, because normally one expects antiferromagnetic order at a scale set by the Curie-Weiss temperature, and indeed there are systems where this frustration parameter could be 1,000 or 10,000 or even bigger. And also one can look at whether the system has a spin gap or is gapless, and yesterday Leon gave us an entire recipe for how one might look for what kind of spin liquid one has by really examining these power laws. Okay, so my favorite system really is one that was not mentioned yesterday, but it's helium-3. Which is in some ways also the closest system to what the cold atom people are doing, because it's a system of very high purity and it has no spin orbit coupling. So the magnetism really comes from the unpaired spin of the neutron, basically. And it is known that the bulk, when one has three-dimensional helium-3, basically forms BCC solid. BCC is usually unfrustrated for antiferromagnetism, but nevertheless, these systems actually form what is called an up-up-down-down phase. So there's a plane of upspins followed by a plane of another upspins, then two planes of downspins, and so on. And this is as a result of ring exchanges, basically. And what we are interested in is basically helium-3 absorbed on graphite. And in particular, the second layer forms a commensurate triangular lattice, and this is the system that shows no long-range order and no spin gap, and various people, including Doug Oshroff and Fukuyama and others, have studied this problem. So here's the experimental data taken from a review article by Fukuyama, who suggests that this is actually a gapless spin liquid, but I think it's worth re-examining the data over here a bit more carefully. So let me first discuss what the data is. So this is specific heat versus temperature on a log-log scale, and this is basically susceptibility as a function of temperature also on a log-log scale. Okay, so one can see here, this is the helium-3, the bulk helium-3, the sharp phase transition around 1 millikelvin. And this is the data that represents the measurements on the second layer of helium-3. And it is compared, the theory was done by Miskwich and co-authors, and I think Claire was one of the co-author on this. It has this double hump structure. This theory, one can actually estimate the various ring exchange constants by first principles, by calculations done by people like David Sepperly. So one has some idea of what the exchange constant should be, and this is basically what they get by theory over here. So it looks quite different. Primarily, it looks different in the sense that the theory suggests that this is a short-range spin liquid, really, RVB-type spin liquid, whereas the experiments, they don't show a spin gap. This is still basically a power law here. Also, the susceptibility in theory should be turning around like this, whereas this susceptibility keeps on increasing. And in fact, what is interesting is that this is the Curie-Weiss fit. And so the susceptibility, this is a log-log scale, instead of going down, the susceptibility becomes very large. Yes?
So you say the MSC fit is up initial?
No.
Not completely.
Not completely. In fact, we did not, when we do that model, which is in black, we did not take the parameters, the experimental parameters, because we try to look at somewhere, at a system which has a large gap. And in fact, we should have moved our parameter to the control. So it's the parameters that are in the MSC model are not the good parameter to fit helium-3.
Okay. So I think the theory needs to be revisited here, and also the analysis of the experiment. So one thing that I believe is important, there was something pointed out by White-Elser, that actually, if one looks at the second layer, there are two types of sites there. There are A sites and B sites. So the difference is that one type of site sits right on top of the atom in the lower layer and is much less mobile than one, the other type of site, which is much more mobile. And these A sites, which form the three-quarter of the spins, they basically form a Kagome lattice. And these B sites actually form the rest of the sites, essentially forms a triangular lattice. So if one takes a very simple calculation over here, all I've done is taken one quarter of the spins to have a Curie-Weiss temperature of T1, the other three-quarter of the spins to have a Curie-Weiss temperature, which is, it should be three-quarter of the spins have a Curie-Weiss temperature of 1, and the other quarter have a Curie-Weiss temperature, which is 1/10. Basically, one can pretty much reproduce the kind of experiment, the behavior that one sees in experiments. And this is suggesting that there really, one should take into account these two different types of spins. And it is quite likely that, you know, if one can separate out the effects of the weakly coupled triangular lattice of spins, one would end up with a gap spin liquid. Okay, so this this analysis clearly needs to be looked at again. Okay, so now the second system is this one that was put forward by Koldia and co-authors. And if one wants to sort of grade these different systems based on how many times they've been cited, this one comes in basically at number 3. Okay, so experimental paper that talks about quantum spin liquids. By the way, to get some idea of theory versus experiments here, Phil Anderson's paper on the cuprates talking about RVB state has like 4,500 citations. Compared to that, the largest cited experimental paper has about 250. Okay, so this system is the nice thing about this system, cesium copper chloride, the copper atoms basically form a layered triangular system. It's really very nice experimental work, and it is very well characterized. That is, one knows the exchange constants from basically high field measurements quite well, and the system actually ultimately, okay, this is an old slide taken from Koldia's presentation here at the ITP, really. Since then, the magnetic field measurements have been done much more carefully, and the phase diagram is much better understood. But the main point I want to make here is that as a function of temperature, the system ultimately develops long-range order. So it goes into some kind of a solid phase, really. But well above that, there is a phase that was called a two-dimensional fractional quantum spin liquid, and its main characteristic was that one sees this continuum of excitations over here. That is, one doesn't just see sharp quasi-particle-like excitation, but a continuum with a well-defined lower and upper energy scales. So I think for this system, Balance and Staric have really quite convincingly argued that the spin liquid physics is essentially one dimensional. That is, the spin-ons in the system are confined in chain. So essentially, if one considers a situation where I think they consider a simple model of this, where they basically consider first decoupled chains, and then in the chains, they consider states, the ground state, as well as all the two spin-on states, and then treat the interchain coupling as perturbation in that limited subspace, basically. And they can explain essentially all the key features of this data, namely where one sees where the lower and upper limits of the continuum should be when the these triplon states, if you like, which in their calculations are bound states of spin-ons, when they should be above and below the continuum, starting continuum over here, when the line shape should be sharp, and when it should not be sharp, and so on, as well as, you know, at what k values one should see these power laws in frequency. So really, in great detail, they have argued that the system is really well described by assuming that the spin-ons remain confined to the chain. So in that sense, maybe one should not count this for today's purpose as a quantum spin liquid either. So, but one important message here is that careful neutron spectroscopy may well be an important clue to identifying quantum spin liquids, because non-quasi particle dynamics is really a hallmark of quantum spin liquids, and neutron scattering can see this. This is a very recent preprint on the cuprates, less than I would say a month ago, by again Koldia and collaborators. And the point that they are making, this is on lanthanum copper oxide, one of the most studied systems. The point they are making is that there are specific points in the Brillouin zone where somehow the intensity extends a lot more, where the dynamics, if you like, is a lot more non-quasi-particle-like, that the spectral weight is very reduced as far as the quasi-particle is concerned, and there's a lot of extension at higher energy. But really not going to say much about this here. Okay, so the systems that have actually attracted the most interest, that have the highest number of citations, if you like, are these variety of organic molecular solids. And there are many of them. Basically, they are long molecules, and two of these molecules are together. Basically, they form layered molecular solids, where in each unit cell, actually, there are two molecules, and there's essentially one electron per unit cell at low energies. And these systems have been argued by Ross McKenzie in particular to be well described by anisotropic triangular lattice Heisenberg model, where the coupling is T along these two directions and T prime along this third direction over here. And what is interesting about these materials is that they are held together by various ligands, and depending on which ligand one has, one can get at low temperatures either an antiferromagnet or a superconductor, or sometimes by application of pressure, one can go from an antiferromagnet to a superconductor. So they can be metals or insulators. So there are all kinds of possibilities here. So of these, the paper that really has the most citation is this one by Shimizu and co-authors in PhysRev Letter. And it's about this particular molecular solid whose susceptibility is actually remarkably well described by a simple triangular lattice Heisenberg model with no anisotropy, okay, with a J value of about 250 Kelvin, and yet shows no sign of long range order down to 32 millikelvin. And this is the original data over here. So they are contrasting this system with some other ligand that actually shows long range order. And so in NMR, the signal basically is that as the system develops long range order, different sites become inhomogeneous and the spectra begin to split into different parts over here. Whereas in this case, one can see that there's essentially no change down to 32 millikelvin.
That's what you expect from triangular.
Well, so for a triangular lattice Heisenberg model, the consensus of theory has been that there should be long range order. But this, as I said, this system actually is not close to large U at all. So in fact, in general, in this system, this is not really even fully insulating really. The U, what we call U, is really set by the bonding, antibonding splitting of the molecular states of the two molecules. And this is usually quite small, and T is also small in these materials, but T over U is certainly is finite. So basically this system may well be close to a Mott insulator. And the most extensive theory for this has been done by Motronich, who has argued that this system should really be thought of as a gapless spin liquid with a spin-on Fermi surface. Now, if there was a direct evidence for the spin-on Fermi surface, that would be very convincing. I couldn't find the data for this, but basically what one finds is that the susceptibility is linear. Susceptibility is a constant, specific heat is linear, Wilson ratios are order 1, 1 over T1T is also constant, so Coringa ratio is perhaps also nearly satisfied. So many of these things look very much like Fermi liquid, except that, you know, the system is really an insulator. So, however, there is a recent experiment, there are two recent experiments that throw some doubt on this. There's one experiment that suggests that there is some phase transition around 6 Kelvin, And they argue that it is related to some kind of lattice effect, and there's a large entropy release which cannot be there in the spin system. And there's also this other experiment by Yamashita's group. This is a recent science paper that argues that another cousin of these spin liquid materials is actually a better candidate. And they have this data on kappa over T, basically, as a plotted as a function of T square. I suppose the T cube behavior will correspond to phonons. And this other material I was talking about, basically, they argue that at low temperature it has an activated thermal conductivity. So that would not be consistent with a Fermi liquid type scenario, basically. Whereas this other material actually has kappa over T going to a constant as temperature goes to zero. So they suggest that this is a better candidate for a quantum spin liquid. So I would say that, you know, the issue is definitely not settled yet. And in my view, one would need to do more than just these power laws, really. Again, impurities could play a role in all these. Okay, another material that has gotten a lot of attention are these Herbert Smithites, basically. So these materials are structurally perfect Kagome planes. So these are pyrochlore materials, and it turns out that pyrochlore, if you look along a particular direction, you can think of this as being a plane of Kagome spins and another plane of Kagome spins separated by a plane of triangular spins. And this is a zinc copper hydroxide chloride. So ideally, the material is such that all the copper atoms with spin half sit in the Kagome planes, all the zinc atoms with spin zero, basically, they sit in these triangular planes. So the system is supposed to be basically decoupled Kagome lattice Heisenberg model. And indeed, this data is supposed to show that this material is, first of all, much more structurally perfect than this other cousin material over here. And it also does not show any low temperature ordering like this material does. But if one looks at now the susceptibility, this is, for example, a plot of the inverse susceptibility. And this is Curie law would be just a straight line over here. Again, instead of the susceptibility in an antiferromagnet turning up over here, that means going down at low temperatures, it actually turns, the inverse susceptibility turns down, which means the susceptibility starts to become large. Also, the specific heat, what they find is that there is a large specific heat in zero magnetic field, and the specific heat is very sensitive to magnetic field. A lot of the specific heat is reduced by going to higher magnetic field. This is again not what one would normally expect in a spin liquid. Okay, so in fact, the zero field specific heat may even be sublinear. Okay, so one thing to say is that perhaps there are some Curie impurities which are causing the upturn over here. Well, a number of people have tried to fit the data to Curie impurities. So let me discuss this fit by Miskwich and co-authors here. This is probably not very easy to see. It's not easy to fit the data. Actually, maybe this isn't so important, because later data will show that you cannot simply regard the system as a Kagome system plus some Curie impurities, really. The power laws are not 1 over T at low temperatures. So impurities clearly dilute the plane. So most direct evidence for that comes from NMR. This is from the work by Burt and Mendels and taken from the review article. Basically, what they showed is that if one looks at the NMR signal, one can clearly see that there are at least two different types of peaks over here, which one can follow as a function of temperature. And essentially, at high temperatures, you can see that one set over here has really half the susceptibility. And this is an oxygen NMR, so they are arguing that basically some of the oxygen nucleus have only one copper atom as neighbor, and some have two copper atoms as neighbor, and some have only one. So essentially, what these impurities are basically, they are inter-site disorder. Some of the copper atoms are in the zinc plane, some of the zinc atoms are in the copper plane, and this causes dilution in the planes. Okay, so, and this clearly, and the dilution is quite significant, it exceeds something like 6%. So, the proposal has been made by Ying Ran and collaborators, this is a group of Patrick Lee, basically, that after subtracting for impurities, the susceptibility and specific heat can be fitted to power laws as expected for a U1 Dirac spin liquid. Okay, but hopefully at this workshop there would be a talk on what is the ground state of the Kagome lattice Heisenberg model. As far as the spin model, a more realistic spin model with a Heisenberg coupling is concerned, this is perhaps the best candidate for a RVB type ground state. And in fact, I think Steve White has some very recent DMRG data that suggests that that might be the case. So hopefully Steve would give a talk on this here. Okay, but when we have such a large amount of impurity, but also Steve's data suggests that the Kagome lattice Heisenberg model has a large spin gap, whereas as we saw, the experiments do not show any spin gap at all. So one possibility, of course, is that the system really forms a valence bond glass. Namely, impurities or dilution actually cause freezing of spins, a freezing of spin pairs or valence bond. That's because the triangular lattice is really a lattice of it's a lattice of edge corner sharing triangles. And in such a system, anytime you put down a dimer configuration, every triangle on which there is a dimer present is already in its ground state. So all quantum fluctuations have to initiate basically from the bonds that belong to an empty triangle. And it turns out that number of empty triangles in any dimer configuration is really fixed. Okay, every dimer configuration has the same number. So once you have an impurity site, the energy really is lowered by not choosing those sites to be the empty triangle. So one wants to really put frozen dimer configurations just across from the impurity. And if you imagine that you have 6% dilution, a large number of the this will cause a large number of freezing of these, and it will force dimers to begin to form long-range dimers. Okay, and essentially, if one makes a very simple what I suggested in a very hand-waving paper is that if one assumes a valence bond glass, basically, with a random singlet-type pairing for these free spin-ons which are being created around these impurities, being pairing weakly, then one can begin to really quantitatively explain various scaling data that has been seen. So in particular, the Helton and co-authors, they have these two types of data. The susceptibility, first of all, does not go as 1 over t, but goes as t to some power, t to minus some 2/3 power or so. And the susceptibility in a field shows some kind of a scaling behavior over here. Okay, or the magnetization in a field shows scaling behavior. And similarly, the susceptibility, the local susceptibility, the local dynamic susceptibility as a function of frequency also shows some scaling behavior. So if one simply assumes that one has a renormalized set of coupling constants with this random singlet phase, which has a power law distribution of J's, then one can really quantitatively fit both these types of data. Okay, am I going too fast over here? This is close to my last slide, actually. So, okay, this is a couple of other systems, and I was not going to show too many slides on these. So this is a more recent system studied by Takagi's group, This is a 3D hyperkagome lattice. So it's a lattice of corner sharing triangles, but in three dimension, extended in three dimensions. And once again, the thing that they basically notice is that it has a large frustration parameter. So the susceptibility can be fit to a Curie-Weiss law, and the Curie-Weiss temperature is of order 600 Kelvin, whereas down to 2 Kelvin, they see no long-range order. So there's a substantial frustration parameter, and also the specific heat shows a behavior which is a power law. It looks like a T-square behavior here. And this is another system. This is a spin one system that has also attracted a lot of attention. Gee, the figures are not showing up very well. So this is a spin one system based on nickel, basically, which forms a triangular lattice. And their claim is that this also does not order down to very low temperatures, and the specific heat shows a T-square behavior. Well, there have been proposals for this one in particular in terms of pneumatic order using biquadratic interactions. However, actually, more recent neutron scattering data has shown that there is a fairly substantial spin-spin correlation in the system. It's not long-range ordered, possibly due to impurities, which causes a freezing of the spins. But there is a spin-spin, there's a fairly long-range spin-spin correlation, which is not where it should be for a triangular lattice, because this system has complicated nearest second and third neighbor interactions. Okay, so maybe, I'm going to finish a little early here. So the good news, basically, from my talk is that various experimental groups, especially in Japan, are actively searching for quantum spin liquids. And many more materials with large frustration parameter and power law specific heat are likely to show up. Okay, but the question remains, what is the best way to identify quantum spin liquids? Okay, and are there smoking gun signatures? Okay, can we simply go by these power laws in temperature and accept them as telling us that we have a quantum spin liquid? And in general, in solid state systems, one always has disorder, various lattice related effect, and other degrees of freedom, like they're also interesting spin orbital liquids I didn't talk about. So are quantum spin liquids truly robust to disorder, lattice, and other degrees of freedom? So I'm going to stop there. Thank you.
Your last question, but perhaps the obvious question before, but do you think that the problem of disorder is important for any algebraic spin liquid? Could you say more on topological spin liquid eventually and algebraic spin liquid?
Well, I think that's a question for maybe Matthew. I mean, I think if one wants to, in my view, if one wants to find quantum spin liquids in real materials, that issue is absolutely a must. One has to address that. I'm sure, so one could look at, I'm not sure field theories can give you local, so impurities in general, impurities modify the state necessarily near the impurity. And certainly lattice models, one can do numerical calculations and study how they do. I'm not sure that field theories can necessarily tell you. Maybe they can they?
How? There
have been studies, okay. So. Is the phase robust? Does the phase survive with significant disorder? I don't know the answer.
The gap topological spin liquid presumably would be pretty robust to disorder. And maybe.
Would you? I mean, so I was arguing that the Kagome system. we don't know whether this is a valence bond solid or a gap spin liquid, but this argument seems very robust to me, that, and it shows up in numerics in a very robust way, that if you put a spin, if you put an impurity, if you dilute a site, then in the bonds next to that get frozen. So how would this affect a RVB now?
Will be some local effect.
Yeah.
Right. If they're far enough apart, it'll be on some correlation length.
So, but very small. I mean.
6% is already large.
6% is very large. Yeah, these are not dilute.
But maybe in. I think we should be concentrating on the cleanest materials. So among the Kagames, this molybdenite is maybe 100 times cleaner than this material.
But does that show long-range order?
Yeah, so that is, by standard definitions, is definitely not a spin liquid. But it does have some very anomalous properties. It might be it might still be exotic, even though it has some grade order. Something to prohibit something that's exotic in the sense of having fractional quasi-particles, having spin-ons, but also being ordered among those inorganics, those category materials. To me, that's the most promising.
What was the compound again?
It's called molybdenite. It's one of the three category materials. Had a list of all of them somewhere back.
I don't think I had a list of the wolbothites on there, but yeah, I said other Kagome materials, yeah.
The other Kagome materials. The imperfect Kagome.
Yes.
Is there a non-magnetic reference compound for the thermal conductivity measurements on this organic system?
Well, I think the plot was showing something, yes.
One's the magnetic order. That green one.
Is this one here?
This one, okay.
Yeah.
And that's only linear t dependence, or does it also show some gap?
So this is a function of t square over here. So this is claimed to be gapped.
It's t square.
This is kappa over T. This is the material that they claim has a linear thermal conductivity. I don't know.
I think the number is pretty weak.
I think in the thermal conductivity in this temperature range, the field dependence is weak. I think they claim that some low temperature gap opening up in the field. It's hard to reconcile sometimes the thermal conductivity and the heat capacity measurements.
So what they claim for the mean free path?
I don't know.
Long.
Good. Very long. I think it was already claimed to be long in the BEDT, but this new material has a considerably larger thermal conductivity.
Like 200 nanometers?
Yeah, many hundreds of less. It's very big.
Yes.
I see it yesterday earlier in the talk that sort of a broad features in the NMR in neutron scattering spectra were suggestions that something might be spin liquid, right? Suppose you had a valence bond gas or something like that. I mean, would those phases also have broad features in neutron scattering data?
Not really, no, because so those have been studied quite a bit. Well, which ones? So if you take something like copper nitrate, which forms an alternating Heisenberg chain, So indeed, it has been studied. So the most of the spectral weight would be in the triplet excitation. There would be a continuum of extra excitations also. So it would be non-zero, and there, of course, it has been theoretically calculated in great detail and compared with experiments. So there would be something there, and you can call it a spin liquid. But most of the weight is going to be in the triplets. Yes?
You open another very interesting question, which is the question of M3. I think this subject could be revisited from the theoretical point of view, because it's, you know, it's a very pure...
Right, exactly. So.
And the present state of the art from the theoretical point of view is not excellent, because the model that we did
much more can be done.
Well, but as not a good parameter, coupling parameters and so, but it was not possible to do better with exact diagonalization. But if other techniques could look at this problem, that might be interesting.
Plus, I think it's a big plus that there are almost no impurities there, and one cannot say there's an isotropy or something changing the susceptibility. So really, it's a clean system in that sense.
On the other hand, it's difficult to do a lot of measurements on it. You could not put neutron, which is kitchen. So that there is essentially specific heat and spin susceptibility that could be measured with a very large accuracy. But I think it could be specific heat has been done by Kidama group, and that might be looked at.
There's some people continuing to work on it, like Momoi. Theoretically,
Momoi has been looking at the problem of limited spin exchange on.
He's still working on the same Hamiltonian. Yeah. I haven't followed it.
I think that might be more interesting. You could tune exactly the parameter. You have some theoretical tool to look at. And I think nobody is working for the moment, but I may be wrong.
You have a comment?
Maybe just comment on your last slide where you talk about experimental, what to look for. I mean, you know, I totally agree that's a key question. But you know, one thing which is, you know, if it could be measured in some way, surely is a smoking gun signature. Anything that could really sense the presence of a Fermi surface
in an insulator,
you know, which is predicted at least for some of the theoretical candidates in liquids. There have been some proposals, for instance, a recent one that Semple made is that you could actually measure Friedel oscillations and charge density in your principle.
That would be rather direct, yeah.
See some oscillations at a 2KF. Pretty direct, strange thing to see.
But only works the gapless ones, though, right?
Not even all the gapless ones. Only the ones with the spin on Fermi surface. But, you know, so you need, I think these questions don't have a general answer. So don't do that. I think you need to have, no one will be able to ever nail this down without some degree of microscopic understanding. But at least that's one of the commonly believed states to be competitive. You don't have a heck of a lot of alternatives if you're seeing these linear or specific linear thermal conductivity versus something radically different from spin liquid.
Okay, so